Welcome back to the Infinitely More podcast. Today we have a super special episode. I'm going to kind of let Rick get into this and talk about what this episode is going to be about. And then Jeff is going to introduce our guest, Oak, sitting right next to me. So Rick, you want to tell us a little bit about what this episode is going to be about? Yeah.
Yep. We're going to talk about the history of Grace Church, kind of what that the origins are of it and where it came from. And I'm really excited. I think this is going to be a great conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, do you want to tell me who this man right next to me is?
I have no idea. I have never met this man before in my life. So this is Robert Philip Combs. So this is Pastor Bob, and he's the GOAT, greatest of all time right here, my mentor, my second father. And Bob was the senior pastor. He started in 1973, is that right? That's right.
Correct. Yeah.
And was the senior pastor until you gave that honor to me. And so we've been together all these years. I came in 1993. So 33 years we've been together here at Grace Church. But when Bob came, it was a little church in a little building in Norton, Ohio. And so much of who we are and what we're like, and the character and the mission, the passion of Grace Church comes from this guy.
So, yeah.
Changed a lot of lives, and mine included.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And Bob introduced himself. I met him today for the first time, and he introduced himself as Mr. Good Looking.
So, Mr. Good Looking. By the way, he calls me the ugly one, so that's true.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah, we're definitely going to get into hearing all about the origins of Grace Church and the history. But Bob, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about how you felt the Lord call you into ministry. I know that you've described how that happened at an early age, and I would just love to start with that.
Well, I was born in Eastern Kentucky. I was born in my grandfather's house. And there was a relative of mine that pastored the Clayhole Grace Brethren Church. And I would spend summers there, even after we had moved to Ohio. And in those summers, I would ride on the church bus with Sol Landrum was his name. And I came home one time from a summer, and I told my mother, I said, I want to be a pastor like Sol Landrum.
Wow.
And that was a growing thing with me. I never changed. I didn't want to be anything else. I just got passionate about it. And all these years later, I'm not sorry. That's cool. Listened to the passion that I felt. So,
I know you've told me in the past how some of the hard times and struggles, even within your family, some of the difficult things at church really played a formative role in your life, shaping you to be the pastor you are and shaping you spiritually. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, discovered in, I guess, every church I was in, some agitation, people that wanted to fight because they wanted to control and wanted it to be their way. I remember a guy that I really admired. He was from my first church in Sterling.
Mm.
And he would come home to visit from Southern California, and I would always have him preach on a Sunday night. And I thought if I could ever be a preacher like him, man, I will have succeeded. And then I went to a pastor's get together, and I got a phone call from Southern California. And they said, we need to tell you that our pastor has run away with the church secretary.
Mm.
And we don't know where he is. We don't know. And at the time, his mother was near death.
Mm.
Well, she died, and he came home and wanted to spend time with me. I didn't want to spend time with him because I'd gotten so hurt that I felt betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
That was very difficult for me. You know, as I unfortunately I had a number of times like that when I got disappointed in some pastor's life.
Mm.
So and I'm glad that I've not had a problem with Jeff. Yeah. This was something that was very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when some people in the church was fighting at Norton, and I had a friend that was here. They used to call this the Fairlawn Church. I had gotten acquainted with this guy in seminary. In fact, Newt Larson lived downstairs in a house, and Jim Kennedy, who I'm talking about, lived upstairs. And we decided to get together once a week and just share and pray. And I would come to him and be complaining about somebody else fighting, and he said, "Oh, Bobby, they're babies. Burp 'em, Bobby, burp 'em, burp 'em." And he would end up getting me laughing. That was good medicine for me.
Yeah, it is.
Because I realized they were babies that need burping.
Yeah.
And it helped me through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have some of those people today, mm-hmm. and they're not the same people because I burped them.
Yeah. That's cool. Tell us about how Grace Church started. I remember one time you told me that there were 9 people that were responsible for the start of what's now the Norton campus. So tell us a little bit about that, how that started.
Well, there was a church on Worcester Road in Barberton that was not very fundamental.
Mm.
And there were 9 people that kind of rebelled against that and went and bought a house, they did. And they started a church in this house, and one of them, well, two of them is still alive. And when I first came here, there was a number of them that was still alive. Mm. So they and. It's kind of interesting. There's one of those guys that really was committed to the church. And when we bought the present land that we're on, I shouldn't say we bought it, but when it was purchased, one of these men took a mortgage out on his house. Huh. In fact, I understand that it was a second mortgage.
Wow.
In order to buy the piece of property that the church sits on.
Wow. That's the Norton, what's now the Norton campus, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
That's amazing. And then you came in 1973, that's right?
Yes.
And the church began to grow there, and at one point you brought Jeff on, is that right? Tell
yes.
us that story about how Jeff came to the Norton campus.
Well, somebody said there was a snotty-nosed kid.
So far, this is all true.
Up to this point.
Yeah.
I had a guy that was there for the summer. In fact, he was with a traveling team, and I went to him and I said, if you ever want to do a summer ministry or something like that, let me know. I would love to have you, because I was impressed with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I got a phone call from him, and he came for the summer. When he finished that summer, and he was in college, he said, as he went back to college, he said, you need a youth pastor. I said, tell me about it. I said, you're out there, find somebody and let me know who they are. Well, he called me one day and says, I think I found somebody that can work there. Said it's a snotty-nosed kid. It was Jeff. Kind of interesting. I had an aunt and uncle that were very close to his mom and dad.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this, you know, at the time. But I remember Jeff and Heidi and I meeting at a restaurant, and it was around Christmas time, I think.
Yep.
And I talked to them about the possibility of coming. And that began the process. We didn't have the money, as I recall.
I also recall this.
we didn't have enough to pay him, and so we did a fundraiser to get him.
Wow.
At the church. At the time I came, we had right around 50 people. And I can say that the time that Jeff was there was a time of growth.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, I'd love to hear from you. What are some of your early memories of when those first meetings and when you met Bob and decided to make the commitment to come to Grace Church?
So I think what really drew me to Norton was the church I grew up in. If you had a problem, the last people you would ever tell is the people you went to church with. You really, church was kind of irrelevant. Mm. And so you would go and do your duty, and then you kind of went and lived the rest of your life. And when I met Pastor Bob, you know, his big saying is meet people where they are so you can take where they need to go. I had no idea that you could actually deal with real life in church, that the church was a hospital for sinners, that it was a place for broken people, and you could be yourself and be authentic to that while still being like loved, but also corrected and matured and complete. I had no idea all that went together.
Yeah.
And so, I remember distinctly walking through the building. We kind of met. This is after we went to the restaurant. We had just built the gym down at the Norton campus, if you go there. And Bob's just kind of showing us around. You know, we're trying to get to know each other. And I remember people interrupting him.
Mm.
And he'd come back and he'd be like, that guy used to be an alcoholic. And this is Frank Robinson. You know, he's with the Lord now. And he's like, and God changed his life. And now he's a leader in the church. And then another lady came in, interrupted him, and she had been a prostitute and God had changed her life, and the church was helping her kind of try to get contact with her kids again, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I looked at him, I said, you got some messed up people in your church. And he looked at me and he, you know, if you're listening to this, Bob is like 4.5 feet tall. So he was looking up at me with pointing at me, and he goes, yeah, he goes, we like it that way.
Mm.
We like it that way. And I thought, I didn't know this happened.
Wow.
I didn't know that a church was like this. Like, you really love Jesus. You really love people. How about none of us fake anything, and we just try to love each other and love Jesus and grow together? And that's all him. Like, yeah. That is the DNA. Everything about Grace Church, that are all of our campuses where you would feel that, is you're feeling the discipleship of Bob Combs.
Wow.
in our lives.
That's really awesome.
And he was the first pastor. Bob has very conservative theology. He's very committed to God's word. Like, he taught me that too.
Mm.
But he's like, let's actually love people and let's do it for real.
Yeah.
And those two things aren't exclusive to each other. So you meet people where they are, and it's usually in their mess.
Yeah.
But you take them where Jesus wants them to go and calls them to go. And it is the very DNA of who we are as a church. And so that drew me.
Sure.
And it drew Heidi, and I was like, this is crazy, because I remember thinking, if the adults are this messed up, the kids must be completely messed up. So that was our job, was be the youth pastor there at the Norton campus.
Wow. That's cool. You know, Nick, I actually have a question for you based on that. I'm just curious. So you know, Nick's role here at Grace is kind of 33 years after a lot of those conversations. In what ways do you see this idea of meet people where they are and take them where they need to go? How do you see that showing up at Grace Church from your perspective?
It's funny because, like, we did the other podcast I run, we did one with Aaron Key.
Yeah.
And we actually quoted it from him because he kept saying, you know, God loves someone so much that, you know, he'll meet them where they are, but won't let them stay there. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm sitting here, I asked him one day in the office, I was like, where'd you get that from? He's like, I don't know. It's been around in the Grace ecosystem. I've heard Jeff say it before. And now I'm like, It came from right here. I'm right next to the guy that
said it. From the master right yeah. there. Yeah, he cool. taught us that.
Yeah, and so for me, especially coming on staff, one of the things when Ryan was talking to me over the summer about ministry and going into ministry, he was like, you need to pick up Grace DNA. And I'm like, what the heck does that mean, right? But when I started to come on staff, I started to realize it's just the rich, deep history. It's infinitely more. It's what we're talking about here on these episodes. And man, every time that I learn about stuff like this, I just get a deeper appreciation for what God is doing here and the fact that I get to be a part of it. And so from even being a student, the ways that shows up in the philosophy of how we do ministry, of like our Wednesday nights that I would show up to when I was a student at Akron East, Aaron would set them up for us to, he wanted to hear, he always was so emphatic about, I want to hear about the not great things going on in your life, and I want to help you through those.
Yeah.
And his heart would break when you'd share something going on. He'd meet with you and walk with you. And that's not just Aaron Key. That's every pastor here at Grace. Like, that's the other thing that I've picked up on is we deeply care about who is here on staff because they're representing something so much greater. They're representing Bob Combs, you know, the things that he has emulated through his life and ministry. You got to be attached to that. And so for me, it's been really beautiful to watch it, experience it, and now be a part of it and learning and growing in it. So
yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, cool. Perfect. I love that it's showing up in, you know, your life and Ryan's life and
yeah.
and throughout Grace Church. You're right. I see it across all the campuses too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we can talk about the origins of Grace Church without at least hearing a little bit about Judgment House. I know that mm-hmm. was a kind of a big thing that happened back at the Norton campus. What is now the Norton campus years ago? And so, Bob, maybe give us a little short version of how you and Jeff worked on getting Judgment House started together.
Well, it was interesting. I went to visit my son in Georgia. He was going to a church at the time, and he wanted me to meet the pastor. And so the pastor and I went out for lunch, and all this guy wanted to talk about was Judgment House.
Mm-hmm.
That he had at his church. And he said, you should do this at your church. And he gave me some videos, and I had my wife driving, and we came to the Smoky Mountains, and I remember holding up these two videos. And I said to my wife, I said, there is power in these videos. Mm. I said, we have better place to pull this off, and we've got better people to make it fly. We should do it.
Mm.
Well, I came back and began to talk it up, and Dwight Stair, who at the time was our financial guy, and he came to me and he said, you're not going to do this. He said, there's nothing in the budget for it, and it'll cost at least $5,000 to pull it off. And I kind of breathed a sigh like I breathed right there then, and I then began to try to raise money. I went to people I thought I could influence, and would you give me $500? Would you give me $100? And it came up with $5,000. And so I took it to Mr. Stair and I said, here's the $5,000. And he said, okay, we'll do it. Well, Jeff was gone at the time that I raised the $5,000. I think you remember this.
I'm going to see if you tell this story correctly.
Well, you came back from Momentum, I think it
was. Yeah, from Youth Conference, yeah.
Yeah, and you walked into my office and you said, we can't do Judgment House this year. And I said, well, I just raised $5,000 and I'm going to take that money all back to those people. I said, because my youth pastor will not back me, so here's your money back. I don't know exactly what happened, but the next morning he came in and he said, we'll do Judgment House.
So that's your version, Jeff.
Yeah, my version. Well, the... So my version is rooted in my relationship with Bob. So it's been very normal over the years for Bob to have an idea, and then he'll share the idea with me and be like, you should figure that out, Jeff. It's kind of the way that goes. And Judgment House was that way. By the way, the Bath campus was that way. And one of my favorite Bob stories, can I tell a Bob story?
Sure.
So absolutely. I'm on... So the Bath campus is going, Bob had retired from senior pastoring, and I'm now the senior pastor. So I'm on a sabbatical. And on a sabbatical, you're supposed to like totally disconnect from the church, totally blah, blah, blah. So I'm on a sabbatical, totally disconnected. Bob calls, and I picked up the phone, and I said, I go, hey, Bobby. He goes, hey. He goes, I talked to these people out at, it's our County Line campus in Sterling. He's like, I popped to these people in Sterling. I think they want to give us their church building, and we'll start another campus. And I said, well, I don't know, Bob. I haven't investigated. I haven't done the background. He's like, well, I got some people together, and I started meeting with them. I said, well, Bob, I don't even know if we should do a campus there or not. He goes, well, you have a meeting to meet with the people about the building. And it was like on sabbatical. I said, Bob, I'm on sabbatical. He's like, good, you're free. Right? So we go through all this. Like, so I start laughing. And I said, Bob, I said, you realize I'm the boss now, right? And he laughed and hung up the phone. And that's how we came over to our County Line campus. So that's descriptive of our relationship. So he's dead on. I had come back from Momentum. And I had said yes to doing a project for Momentum called the Year of Youth Outreach.
Wow.
And so I was like, I don't think we should do it this year. And he's like, you need to do it this year. It's one, I like to say there's about three things over the course of my life that Bob pulled the boss card and is like, you will do this. And Judgment House is one of them. And he was absolutely right about it. So, I don't remember thinking to myself, if I say no, he'll accept that. But I do remember coming back and saying, I think you're right and we're in it. And we were also, this was July, and we were executing this thing in October.
Wow.
And it was a major undertaking. But I remember that first year, I always remember the number, 3,000 people came through and about 300 people accepted Christ.
Wow.
And so he was right about it, and it was a powerful idea. We did it for 15 years.
Wow.
About 150 or 160,000 people came through it.
Wow. So it was, just real briefly, it's a drama.
Yeah, so what it was... Today it would be very old-fashioned, like yeah. it was a 90s thing, and it worked well in the 90s. I'm not sure it would work today. But it was an 11-scene play.
Wow.
And each scene played out in a different room in the church building. And you would take a tour.
Mm-hmm.
The characters were all different people, but they had the same outfit on.
Okay.
So the guy in the blue shirt was Bill, and he was in the next scene. And it would take you to some version of here's life, here's death, here's eternity. Mm-hmm. And then it would kind of tell that story. We had plane crashes, car accidents. We built a tornado one time.
Wow. Built a train.
We had a full-size locomotive in the gymnasium. Like it was unbelievable what we pulled off. And then in the end of it, you would sit down and someone would walk you through the gospel and give you an opportunity to accept Christ. And thousands of people did that. So like I said, today it would feel different. It's a different day and age. But it was very effective at the time, and it really, really reached the community. And what I think what you would say, Bobby, is it changed our church because it taught us we could do something. How would you say it changed our church?
Well, I see some things that changed us. The first thing that changed us was before you were there. We were growing, and we had outgrown the church and needed a building. And we had a design build outfit that came in, and they said, you gotta have a capital funds campaign. And I didn't want to do that, but they knew what they were talking about. And so we did it. We took in $90,000 the year before our capital funds campaign. We took in $180,000 the year of our.
Wow.
I think it changed our self-image. That building. But when we came to the Judgment House, I think it changed our image to our community. Man, all over Akron and Barberton, I still am on, if I'm on an elevator and I have a Grace Church on, oh, the church, that was the church that did that Halloween thing. I still have that happen today.
And you said a version of that capital campaign taught us that we could do something that God called us to do. Judgment House taught us that we could do something to reach the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Campusing has taught us we can do something to reach the world.
Yes.
And Bob would say, and I very much agree, we got we discovered a muscle with Judgment House of, because when we started Judgment House, Judgment House took 500 people to execute.
Wow.
And the church was running about 500 people.
Wow.
So the first couple of years, we borrowed people from other churches.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, it taught us we could do something. So we would, like when I used to write the story, the script. So when I was like, plane crash.
And did a great job, by the way, with the stories.
Yeah. So it's like, how does a church have a plane crash? Well, suddenly you'd figure out. Yeah. Like we brought real airplanes into the church building. So you would figure it out. And then as you're working with people, they're like, I could actually build a full-size locomotive. And Tom Trimble and a team did it. So we kind of learned, like, we could do things and we could dream big. And Bob has said many times it directly tied when we went to launch the Bath campus from the Norton, because Norton is the mother campus.
Yeah.
So launch the Bath campus. We had learned that we could do big things that seem impossible. So we quit thinking of ourselves as like a little church and isn't it neat that we could do a nice thing or two, to like, wow, we can impact our city and then we can impact our region. And it raised that, it's almost like a self-esteem, but the vision of what we saw that God could do more through us than we thought that he could. And Judgment House was a massive part of doing that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's good.
That's awesome.
Great. I guess, talk more about how you think that has worked, kind of played into who we are as Grace Church today. How would you think about that?
I just think that I remember when we started the Bath campus, I remember talking about, which by the way, is something else I didn't want to do. And he had to kind of make me do it.
Maybe you should tell a little bit of that story too.
Well, it's back to where the Bath campus is was called the Fairlawn Grace Brethren Church. It was a sister church to ours. Mm-hmm. Tough times. They had called Bob looking for leadership and wisdom, and he was kind of interacting with them. The pastor left. Mm. The people realize how valuable the land is that the Bath campus sits on, and realize they were going to lose it.
Yeah.
And so the short version is they said to Bob, if we give you the property, will you replant a church?
Yeah.
This is our relationship again.
Yeah.
Bob is like, yes, knocks on my door. Hey, Jeff, you need to figure out how to go play, start a campus up there. Like, all right. So, but we figured it out from scratch. So this is 26 years ago.
Yeah.
There weren't books and conferences on multi-campus churches. Yeah. There was some people doing it, but we had to learn kind of everything from scratch, and then we had to learn what it meant for Grace Church to do it. And we, Bob and I don't know if it wasn't for our relationship. Bob and I trusted and trust each other so deeply that we can fail together also. Mm. So we can make mistakes, which we made a bunch of them, and then we can learn enough to have a success, and we'll share the success too. But it was just kind of feeling our way through it at the beginning. But we felt, one of the things I love about Bob and I've learned about, he's taught me is, if it's the right thing and God is leading, the answer is yes. Mm. Everything else you figure out, he taught me that. Mm. Like if the Lord's in it, and it's the right thing, especially if it involves loving and protecting people, which there was a congregation here that we needed to love and protect. It's the predetermined yes.
Yeah.
So the answer's yes, and then we'll figure it out. So I learned to lead that way from him, and we would just start doing that. And the people trusted him, and by then I had been at the church for a while, so I had a little bit of trust too. And we just sorted it through. But think about it. It took us, we started Bath. So we had Norton and Bath. We used to call it the North Campus and the South Campus. It took us 12 years of being Norton and Bath before we started Medina.
Wow.
So it took us 12 years to start one campus.
Yeah.
We've started seven more
yeah.
in the 10 years after that.
Wow. Yeah.
So we just had to go on that learning curve because we didn't have the knowledge, we didn't have the instincts, we didn't know what was a good decision, bad decision. And you'll sometimes people hear me say like one of the mistakes we made is Bob would say we accidentally emptied the nurseries at the North at the Norton campus because Heidi and I were the young couple on staff then, and our oldest son was just a baby. Well, we learned that was a mistake. Mm. So, like Rick, you're super involved in this, and Nick, you're going through this at Akron East right now. We're much more disciplined about who we take. I made a mistake when Medina was started. I wiped out my college ministry when I let Tony go. And I'm like, okay, it's not that we don't want college kids to go, but like we have to think. So because of the mistakes Bob and I made, we learned to think about the mother campus as much as we think about the baby campus, the one that's being birthed. So just stuff like that. Yeah, kind of figured it out as we went, and God has blessed it. But it was our relationship with each other. It was our trust of each other, which is the exact thing that makes our campusing work now.
It does. In fact, I think we got to talk about that a little bit. You both have touched on the idea of trust and the unity of working together, and talk for a little bit about that. Bob, you talked about vision campaigns. I think of those as a time that unify a congregation around an idea. But talk about the importance of unity in a church for a little bit. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's extremely important because without unity, you don't have trust.
Yeah.
And without trust, you're not going to move in any direction.
Yeah.
You're just going to sit there and complain. Really?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That I've seen that, and I'm glad that we don't do that.
Yeah.
We find a way to help each other. I see the church not as a great preacher that is able to do all this stuff, but it's a team.
Mm-hmm.
When I find somebody that I realize, man, they can do this, then I give them the job. Because that they have the ability, they got the giftedness to do it.
Yeah.
And so I just give them the job. Yeah, you know, Jeff, I trusted him because I knew he could do the job. And had the ability and his ability that God blessed him with as a little boy.
Yeah.
You know, I said to him recently, you know where you got your creativity? Because he's very creative. Mm-hmm. He got it from his mother.
Mm-hmm.
His mother ran a ministry at a nursing home.
Mm.
And created just great things with her ideas. He inherited that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But there's others, just you don't give them the job just to give them the job. You give them a job because they can do the job.
Yeah.
And enjoy doing it and being passionate about it.
Cool. How about you, Jeff? How would you say, as your role as senior pastor, how do you foster unity amongst the people of Grace Church, amongst the staff of Grace Church? Yeah, how do you foster that? Why is it so important?
It's everything. Yeah. And so the trust is the currency of ministry.
Mm.
And one of the ways that you get, that you allow people to trust you is you invite them into the mission and the vision, and you play off of their strengths. So I liken it to baseball a lot.
Mm.
A Hall of Fame shortstop is not a starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a designated hitter, sometimes there's somebody just better at that at bat than you are.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Bob taught me, he trusted me. And he also rarely told me no. He'd be like, try it. See if it works. Go for it. Yes. And then if it started to work, instead of being insecure or feeling like he wasn't in the limelight, he would resource it.
Mm.
So he would use his credibility and say, no, we're giving the youth ministry more. Or he got me Vans one time for the youth ministry. And like, so he would take his credibility and throw fuel on the fire of whatever I was involved with. That's what I want to do as a leader. Now, if you think about it, that's exactly what it means to launch a campus.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, we're like, no, there's an opportunity, there's a leader. How about all of us, all of our campuses, how about we throw fuel on Stark North?
Yeah.
And let's get Aaron the money he needs, and let's share leadership, and there's a staff person that needs to go over there, and let's leverage, like with I leverage Bob Combs's credibility with people at the church that gave us their building.
Mm-hmm.
I was, yeah, still leveraging Bob, and Bob would say do that because he had the relationship. So it's what he and I did just on a broad level, and what it does is, if you don't care about getting the credit and you don't care about your ego. Hmm. And you I don't think anybody can be devoid of insecurity, but you can fight it.
Yeah.
You can not be paralyzed by it. The kingdom of God just unleashes.
Yeah.
And it's a powerful thing. And that's how I want to lead.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that if we lead well, we drift into the anonymousness of history, mm-hmm. and only Jesus Christ is glorified
yeah.
through it.
Yeah.
So that's Bob has taught me that.
Yeah.
You know, there's thousands and thousands of people at Grace Church who don't know him anymore.
Yeah.
That doesn't make him angry. It makes him proud and yeah. and happy, because yeah. the kingdom work is carrying on.
Yeah.
And then it's like for every generation, like, It's my turn soon,
yeah.
you know, kind of thing. Well, if we think that way as a church, we'll keep advancing the kingdom forward.
Yeah,
and it so and true. It's and it and God, I think, is pleased. The Spirit of God unifies us as a whole body, as one church, and then that allows us to act on things that are beyond what we could ask or imagine, and it's a riot to be
it
a part
is.
Of.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, I've been at on staff here at Grace Church for about 10 years now, and before that, I was at Goodyear, a big corporation, for a long time. And when I came to Grace, I remember thinking that the kind of the intensity that Grace runs at feels a lot like a big corporation. It just mm-hmm. runs at a intense pace. But the big difference was that there wasn't a difference in intensity. There's a difference in tension.
Mm-hmm.
In a big corporation like that, there's just lots of tension. There always is. But at Grace, I just found that like the people running the, mm-hmm. they actually love each other.
Yeah,
and to
yeah.
be in a group of, be working with a group of people on an intense, ambitious, you know, mission, and to do it with people you know and love and trust is just, yeah. it's incredible.
Yeah.
And you see that I see it across all of Grace Church. And it's an incredible thing.
Yeah. Bob, I wanted to ask you a question. I was sitting there, and before this, we talked about that you've been in ministry for 63 years, and I'm in my first year of ministry.
Yeah.
So, big difference here. After 63 years of ministry and still going, what advice would you give the person that's just starting that mission?
One day at a time.
One day at a time.
Yeah. I'm doing a thing tonight. Your decisions today determines your tomorrows. That's quite a saying, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to concentrate on today mm-hmm. and to make today right,
mm-hmm.
Not to jip anybody, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not to do something underhanded that I'm not going to tell people about.
Yeah.
You have to make every day rich.
Mm.
Let me tell you, I just can tell you a story here. There's a guy that I'm very close to. He called the church one day, and he had had a gun up against his head, ready to pull the trigger. And he decided to put the gun down and call the church. Well, he ended up with me.
Mm.
And I led him to Jesus, and it was a total transformation. He was going through a divorce. I helped him walk through that divorce. And of all things, he met a woman married to a woman. And She had just gotten a divorce from that woman. Today, they're married. I married the two of them.
Well.
He has led the other lady that his wife was married to Jesus.
Wow.
Now, the kids' lives, man, they're going to be affected. It's going to determine their outcome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's, and when I'd like to do that again.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd like to do that again. Somehow I did it right that day.
Yes, you did.
Your decisions today determines your tomorrows.
Love that.
Oh my.
Awesome.
And I need to be very careful about the decisions I make.
That's good. It's really
decisions
good.
About the places I go, decision about the friends I hang out with, decisions about how I spend my money, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. So that is this episode in a whole. So we want to, this was an amazing episode to really get the roots of where Grace Church came from, and how we are doing the things that we're doing. And it's very a blessing to us, the fact that we got to have this conversation. So thank you, Bob. And we're going to keep talking about the things of where Grace Church is going and all these different conversations on infinitely more. And we want to continue to point back to those 30 and 30 prayer calls. If you were moved by today and you're like, I want to be a part of this mission, I want to be part of the thing that people sacrifice their mortgages for, to sacrifice for this movement, 30 and 30 prayer calls are where to start. So in the link in the description below, you can find that and find a way to get a part of that. We would love for you to join us in that. So with that, please continue to watch, to watch these episodes and pick up why we do what we do and all the ways that God is working here. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.